More and more New Yorkers are taking to cycling to get around. In fact, bicycling is up 28%, with about 200,000 New Yorkers riding bikes every day, according to the group Transportation Alternatives. Good morning. I'm George Bodarkey, and this is Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. I'm glad you're with us. Bicycling in New York City is not without its challenges. Sure, there are more bike lanes than ever, but there's still no guarantee you won't get checked by an opening car door. Then there's the issue of space. Where do you store your bike when you live in a one-room studio? And where do you teach your kid how to ride a bike when you live on a traffic-clogged street? That's the question Nicole Sprinkle has been pondering as she raises her daughter in Upper Manhattan.
It's no secret that New York parents obsess over things, typically the type of things that don't even raise an eyebrow in most other parts of the country, like preschool. Where else do otherwise normal adults freak out about how well their two-year-old will interview, aka play with blocks, in front of an admissions officer? Well, I've discovered another distinctly New York parenting concern, bike riding. Yep, whole parenting listservs throughout Manhattan and the boroughs have long strings about the best way to teach a child to ride a bike. FYI, training wheels are out and wooden scoot balance bikes are in. The problem is that unlike suburbanites or country dwellers who typically have quiet cul-de-sacs or long stretches of little traffic, New Yorkers have only the odd patch of asphalt within very populated parks, which can make the usually simple task of teaching a kid to ride a bike challenging. Add to that the fact that most of us live in cramped apartments where storing a bike is akin to trying to hide a dead body, and you get the picture. Last night, as I was getting into the elevator of the apartment building I live in with my three-year-old daughter, a friendly neighbor joined us with her bike. Not just any bike, but the kind that folds up into a closet-friendly size package. If you're a New Yorker, you know what I'm talking about. I asked her if there was any drawback to the bike, and she replied that it wasn't the smoothest ride, but it served her purpose well enough to get around in the neighborhood. Then she segued into some quick parenting advice. You know, she said, what's really great for teaching little ones how to ride a bike is starting them off with a scooter. It really helps build their balance. We didn't do that with Ryan. Ryan is a preteen. And he still isn't very good on a bike. And he just doesn't enjoy it. I thanked her, and as I got off the elevator, I congratulated myself on having already bought my daughter a scooter. She's been getting pretty good on it, too. But I couldn't stop thinking about the fact that Ryan had lost out on learning to ride a bike, that quintessential childhood experience that I still treasure. He's smart as a whip, and he probably knows far more about modern art and Broadway actors than the average American kid, but he can't ride a bike. Wow. Then I thought about my husband, who grew up in New York City and can barely drive a car. With public transportation so widely available and owning a car in the city so expensive and frustrating, many city kids don't learn to drive until they're adults, if ever. And like the bike, when you learn that skill too late, you don't ever really get it. My husband has a driver's license, but you'll never find me riding in any car that he's driving. And while public transportation is a great thing, I'd never trade my teenage years cruising around in a VW on the open road for a subway ride. With city living, there's always a trade-off. We make all kinds of crazy compromises for ourselves and our families in order to live in this messy, expensive, marvelous universe. But I have to say, my girl's going to learn to ride a bike by the time she's 5 and drive a car by 16. Stick shift, of course. Even if I have to take her out of her prestigious preschool or high school for a week and head off to a part of the world where finding a quiet road is as easy as, well, riding a bike.
Nicole Sprinkle is a frequent contributor to the New York Times Motherlode blog. She lives in Upper Manhattan.
Here's a piece of advice I don't want to tell you twice, just in case you might need it. About the code of the road and the golden rule, don't you make me repeat it. Number one, put your helmet on.
New York City has more than 400 miles of bike lanes, with the promise of more to come. Overall, bicycle advocates are pleased with the city's efforts to make the five boroughs more cyclist-friendly, but of course, they also see room for improvement. I recently met up with a member of one of the city's leading bicycle advocacy groups on 8th Avenue between 22nd and 23rd Streets.
I'm Noah Budnick, and I'm the Deputy Director at Transportation Alternatives in New York City.
Now, you rode your bike this morning to this interview, didn't you?
I did. Like, about 200,000 New Yorkers, I bike every day. My bike commute is about the same as my commute on the subway and the bus. Sometimes transit's faster, sometimes the bike is faster. Depending on the weather, depending on how much sleep I got the night before.
Now, why do you like to ride your bike in New York City?
For me personally, it gives me a great connection to New York City. You get to experience the city up close, you get to see it, you get to smell it, you get to hear it, like, in no other way. But there's also a myriad of reasons. It's good for my health, personally. It saves me some money. But also, I feel like I'm doing something good for the environment. I'm reducing my carbon footprint, which is extremely important, especially for New York City, as we've seen a lot of the reports on climate change and how that would affect the physical city of New York. I think it's important for everybody to think about.
Now, you said about 200,000 New Yorkers are riding their bikes every day. Is that a transportation alternatives statistic?
It is. The city does bike counts twice a year in Manhattan for about 12 hours. And we use that number as a baseline and adjust it for a 24-hour citywide count. We've been doing it for about 15 years. And the city's actually been doing bike counts in Manhattan for since about 1980. So there's a lot of data to work off of. There should be more data collected on cycling citywide, and we do our best estimation working with statisticians to come up with some reputable numbers.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how bicycle friendly would you say New York City is?
We'd like to think it's the best city for biking in the U.S., and I was on a call yesterday with my colleagues from San Francisco, Portland, Chicago, Philadelphia, and afterwards I was talking to someone from Chicago who... Chicago used to be, hands down, the best biking city in the U.S., and he was saying, well, I feel like Chicago has lost some of its momentum because all these other cities are now vying for that position. New York should be proud because we have the first protected bike lanes in the U.S. We have the busiest bike path in the U.S. on the Hudson River Greenway. We actually have the busiest bridge crossing. The Williamsburg Bridge has the most cyclists of any bridge probably in the U.S. So just by the volume of people riding, New York is the best. And the more people who ride, the safer it is.
For someone who is not familiar with what a protected bike lane is, describe it for us.
Sure. A protected bike lane is what's modeled in the most bike-friendly cities in Europe. And cyclists ride on the street next to the sidewalk, and between the cyclists and moving traffic, that's where the parked cars go. So the cyclists are protected by parking, and it affords a much more comfortable ride and a much safer ride. The statistics have borne that out on the projects around the city.
So here we are on 8th Avenue between West 22nd and West 23rd Street. Is this an example of a protected bike lane?
It is. This is the second protected bike lane that the city put in. The first was on 9th Avenue, which goes south. So this is the northbound pair. And Community Board 4 of Manhattan passed a resolution supporting the extension of this bike lane. It's going to go all the way up to about 34th Street, which is great news. It's great for bike riders. It improves safety for bike riders. But these lanes also make the streets much safer for pedestrians, especially these big avenues in Manhattan, where you have, and we have four lanes of pretty fast-moving traffic. So by putting in a protected bike lane, it slows down the traffic, it calms the street, but it also shortens the crossing distance for pedestrians, which is very important, especially for older people who walk a little bit slower.
This is a great place to actually get a very good feeling of what the difference is between a protected bike lane and a regular street bike lane, because this protected bike lane stops right there at West 23rd Street, but as you say, it will eventually continue now that it has support.
That's right. If you want to have a very technical tour of the bike lanes of New York City, you can do it on one street. You can ride from Hudson to 8th Avenue and for a short while longer all the way up 8th Avenue, because you'll see the buffered bike lane, which is what New York City made famous, and then you'll see the protected bike lane, which we've borrowed from Europe, and then you'll go a little further and you'll see the standard bike lane that's used around a lot of New York and across the U.S., which is at this point, a 20th century relic of bike planning. It kind of gets the bike riders out of the way of drivers, but doesn't afford any protection. And the designs in New York is putting in are really on the vanguard of what 21st century street design should look like, especially in dense urban environments.
What would you say are among the biggest challenges still facing bicyclists here in New York City?
I'll start by saying that last year we took down what was categorically the number one challenge to people who wanted to ride to work but didn't, which is secure bike parking. And working with the city council and the mayor's office, we passed the bike access to buildings law. So now, anybody who works in a building with a freight elevator whose boss says you can park your bike somewhere in the office next to your desk in an unused space, your building has to now let you bring your bike from the street up to your office. So check. That's done.
You can now take your bike in a commercial building, but also on the streets here of New York City, we have bike racks. There are two on this street alone between West 23rd and West 22nd.
The city has a program called City Racks. You can go online to the DOT's website, you can find the City Racks page, and you can make a recommendation for anywhere practically in the city. They have a couple guidelines to help you pick good spots, and they will check out your spot, and if it meets their criteria, they'll go and put a rack in. The city has, I think, about 5,000 bike racks, which is pretty good. Philadelphia, I believe, has about 10,000 bike racks. Philadelphia is a city much smaller than New York, so we have a ways to go.
Well, Noah, thanks so much for your time.
Great. It was good to be out here, and I'll see you on your bike.
Noah Budnick is with the group Transportation Alternatives, a leading advocate for bicycling, walking, and public transit right here in New York City.
I ride my bicycle to work each day. It's not so far. It's better for me than my car.
You're tuned to Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. I'm George Bodarkey.
I downshift my Shimano gears. I pedal hard and I'm out of here. Ooh, glad I am that the coast is clear. Glad I am to be my bicycle and me.
As many cyclists know too well, biking in New York City requires quite a bit of maintenance. Tires go flat, brakes, well, they break, and chains fall off. Whatever the case, you can learn how to fix your own bicycle for free. Cityscape's Maureen Chin takes us to a weekly workshop in Brooklyn where you can use recycled bicycle parts to get your wheels spinning again.
Is it only when there's pressure on it, or if you do this enough, is it going to shift down?
Directly under the Williamsburg Bridge is the Fix Your Own Bicycle Workshop, run by Time's Up, an environmental organization made up of more than 100 volunteers promoting non-polluting transportation. In other words, they're fans of the bicycle.
What's going on now?
Well, we may need to open this up completely and oil it up and putting it back together.
The workshop takes place in a tiny bike store down a narrow alleyway on South 6th Street in Williamsburg. Its location under the bridge makes it convenient for cyclists coming from Manhattan to drop in for a quick tune-up.
I think I need new brakes altogether. The front ones are, like, bent completely.
Adriana is a seasoned biker. She's pedaled cross-country and bikes through rain or snow. When her bicycle needs fixing, she always comes here.
I use this space a lot just to do maintenance on my bike with tools that I don't have at home. So I just come here and use their tools, and they've taught me things that I don't know, so it's a good resource.
Two mechanics are on hand to guide bicyclists through their repairs. They don't do the work for them, so when a problem occurs in the future, bikers know what to do. A mechanic named Colin is helping someone fix a flat.
In order to, or actually generally this way, when you're taking them out, in order to put it under the bead of the tire, which is going through here, and then just work it up. And once you've got one up, you can hook it down like this, right?
Yeah. 19-year-old Idris lives just a few blocks north of the bike shop. He came here to fix his brake pads. He's wearing a soccer shirt. He says he doesn't want to get dirty, but his bicycle is causing mud to splatter across his back.
I need to get like a flap for the back because when I ride through the mud or water, it like rolls off the tire and goes all the way up my back. So I just have like big dirt stains all over my back when I get home.
Some 10 bicyclists are here on this sweltering summer night. Time's Up director Bill DiPaolo says turnout varies from week to week, but he wasn't expecting such a large crowd this evening.
Because it was so hot today, we didn't think that many people were going to come, but a lot of people here for the first time, a lot of people are fixing their bikes for the first time. This guy's fixing his brakes on an old Metro bike, and this woman's on a Specialized learning how to change a flat. So sometimes people exchange knowledge. Other times people are learning for the first time. But one thing is for sure, that everybody's doing it themselves. There's a back room, too. If you're here for the first time, we're a nonprofit environmental group. The tools are on the board over there. There's mechanics around to ask questions.
The Time's Up workshop has its regulars. Jay is one of them. He rides his bike everywhere, even to band practice. He dropped by tonight to buy a recycled part for his bike.
I stripped out this inside of the crank arm right here, and basically it's a very standard piece, so it'd be expensive to buy the whole new thing, but a lot of times they will recycle bikes, and they'll have pieces like this that are cheap.
My seat keeps going down.
That's a tough one. That's damaged. Now sit on the seat. You want a ladder?
That's Andrew, a mechanic who doesn't hide his love for bicycles. He has bicycle tattoos on his arm and a bicycle image on his cap. He jokes around with people while he gives them bike advice.
Interesting. Because if it's at that configuration, it needs to be just at the right height so that when you are in the lowest end of the downstroke, your feet are parallel to the ground.
Right. But it doesn't do that.
Doesn't do that?
Yeah.
I quit.
The mechanics here are strictly volunteer and get a lot out of it. Colin says he felt that way from day one.
The first time I was working here, there were like some neighborhood kids that came in who I taught how to adjust their brakes and stuff. Feels really promising and kind of exciting just to help them out and get them, you know, excited about taking care of their own bikes. It makes you feel more like you're helping the community a little bit.
Yeah, and then so, yeah, set it up.
The Fix Your Own Bicycle Workshop meets at its Brooklyn location Sunday and Wednesday nights, and in Manhattan on Thursday nights. If you can't make it on those nights, stationed right outside the bike shop in Brooklyn is a 24-hour vending machine, where for just a few quarters, you can get brake pads or tire tubes. For Cityscape, I'm Orlene Chin.
So you want to touch the rail on first, and then deal with it later.
So then you want to take it out for a spin and ride on it?
So you want to just scoop it up to you?
I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell that rings and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it.
Cycling around the five boroughs can bring you down the most unlikeliest of streets, leading to all sorts of discoveries, including ones that literally satiate your hunger. A web video series takes viewers through New York City on culinary bike tours and gives tips on urban biking. I spoke with the show's creators, Erie Greco and Jim Fryer, about their project called Pedaling NYC. Erie, let's start with you. How do you describe this project for people not familiar with it?
Well, we call it an adventure series, and the idea is to explore cycling, bike commuting, what have you, with culinary adventures available in the five boroughs of New York City as a way of exploring. It's not about teaching anything specific about nutrition or, you know, how to ride your bike, but just get out there and do it. Do it any way that you enjoy doing it, as long as you get out there and explore and have fun and just, you know, live life and really take advantage of what the city has to offer.
Jim, how did the project come about?
By a kind of random chance meeting of Erie and I at a cycling event, the Tour of California last year. And I've been in the media business for a little while now, and I have a long time cycling background. And Erie comes from a food and lifestyle background in the TV world. And she actually just happened to be working on a project at this cycling event. And we met and just, you know, had that instant click of ideas and aesthetic and work ethic and vision for creating content. Born out of that was the idea of making a show around combining food and cycling, both of our passions. So that's pretty much how it all came together.
Describe for me, if you will, the relationship between food and cycling.
For me, because I spent probably 18 or 19 years working in the food business, in the restaurant business, and then working on cooking shows and food magazines. And that's pretty much, you know, the main meat, if you will, of what I did. And when I came into contact with the cycling industry, I thought, oh, they're going to be a bunch of jocks. You know, they're unsophisticated and they don't know anything about, you know, world-class cuisine and, you know, gourmet food. And what I found was, because people that ride their bike as a professional or as, you know, a bike commuter or just a recreational rider are burning so many calories, they're not only hungry, but they also have to replenish all that nourishment and, you know, electrolytes and everything that's lost. And so they develop more than just an appetite hungry-wise. They develop an appetite in terms of seeking out different kinds of food. A lot of cyclists travel around the world, and so they really have a sophisticated palate. So there's a real connection between eating and riding your bike, especially if you do it, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 hours a week. So, you know, there's this motto in the cycling community, you either ride to eat or eat to ride. And either way, there's a mass consumption of food for pleasure and for necessity.
Jim, you were a pro cyclist. What's your take on this?
Well, we certainly, you know, as an elite athlete, you definitely are concerned with calorie consumption, and it's more about volume. But, you know, as Iri touched on the fact that, you know, both for athletes that compete as well as enthusiasts, there is a ton of travel involved in really exploring different areas. And with that exploration, you discover all the different culinary, styles and opportunities out there. So as you travel not just the country but the world, you know, you really discover and expand your culinary experience.
Each episode of this series, Pedaling NYC, is hosted by someone who loves to ride and eat, whether it be a chef or a U.S. national champion cyclist. Tell us about some of the characters featured in the series.
We didn't want to, you know, get an actor or somebody that we told, okay, this is what you're going to do. But really people that we already knew that lived that sort of, you know, mode, you know, rode their bike, you know, for passion or for work, and also, you know, were very passionate about food and cooking. And so the characters that host the 6 episodes are all people that we're familiar with. 2 of them are food-related professionals in New York City. One is a sous chef at Morimoto, and he's an avid cyclist, rides his bike, you know, every day as a commuter, but also does long rides on the weekends or when he's probably not on the weekends because he works in a restaurant, but whenever he's off. And then the other one, Baruch Sharifi, is this unbelievable eccentric character that I actually filmed with a couple of years ago, who has an exotic spice business, and he delivers wholesale to restaurants, and he does it all by bike. And he's very well known in the restaurant community. And so, you know, those 2 characters really live the food bike combo. And then Meredith Miller, who sort of is the flip side of that coin, she's a professional cyclist and, you know, competitive cyclist, but she represents the sort of eat to ride category where she just consumes, you know, thousands and thousands of calories a day to keep up her endurance on the bike, but also because of her travels really has a great, you know, a great palate and really appreciates good dining. And when we were in New York filming with her on the last night that she was in town, we got to go out for a lavish dinner and, you know, just got to really see how much fun she had when we were ordering, you know, 15 different courses.
Let's talk favorite episodes. Iri, do you have one?
For me, maybe Pizza Fixation, just because, you know, we go to the Brooklyn Flea Market in Fort Greene, and I used to live in Fort Greene, and I love flea markets, and we meet up with Dave Sklaro, who has Pizza Moto, this, you know, mobile pizza oven, which he built himself, and he's so passionate about it, and he also rides a bike. And, you know, there's just so much quintessential New York in that episode, I think, especially on the Brooklyn side, because, you know, I live in Brooklyn, and I grew up in Brooklyn and Queens, so I definitely have an affinity for those areas. But I'd like to hear what Jim has to say.
Jim?
Oh, I'd have to go with the second episode, visiting Thomas at the Waffle Truck, because, you know, he's such a fun character, and, you know, we got to have Meredith, you know, really end her ride with some amazing waffles. And, you know, Thomas is such a, I guess he's really built a name for himself within New York in that, in the food cart culture. But he's also a really avid cyclist, and he's, you know, he's so excited and passionate about cycling. So it's just a perfect match. And we just had so much fun on that episode.
This episode featured a waffle making lesson, didn't it?
It did. Meredith got in the truck and actually made waffles with Thomas, which was great.
Now, where does this web video series live? Where can we watch them?
They are on our site, which we created, which is pedaling.tv.
Great. Iri, thanks so much.
Thank you, George.
Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Iri Greco and Jim Fryer are the creators of the urban cycling web series called Pedaling NYC.
We're on a bicycle adventure, and you're racing in front on the bike that I lent you.
When a bike is no longer rideable, you can use its parts to fix another bicycle where you can use them to make jewelry. The Green Girls Summer Institute, run by the City Parks Foundation, is doing just that. We checked out a jewelry making session at the Recycle a Bicycle workshop in Long Island City, Queens.
My name is Danielle Rowley, and I'm the director of the Green Girls Summer Institute. We are making recycled jewelry. We're at the Recycle a Bicycle workshop in Long Island City. And what we're doing is we're taking materials that would otherwise be swept up into the trash and taken to the landfill, and we're reusing them and turning them into something beautiful that the girls can wear or can gift to their friends and family.
I might give it to my mom or my grandma, or I might just wear it.
Today we're focusing on necklaces. We have some centerpieces and then some little widgets and gadgets that they can weave in to the rest of the necklace. And I was just walking around, and one of the things I was noticing is that everybody has such a different style. We have ones that have so much metal and just so industrial looking, and then we have other ones where they've kind of taken the bike parts and hidden them within other more colorful beads or delicate beads. So it's really cool to see.
Navy blue, light blue and red, and I just keep going on with that pattern, and then I have more light blue beads with the little red in them.
What we've done this year is partnered up with the Young Women's Leadership School in Brooklyn. So the majority of the girls attend that school. We have a couple who signed up just through word of mouth, and they'll be doing this program for 3 weeks.
I think that it's really cool, and it's a really good way to help the environment and do things like this. It's fun.
There are gears, there are ball bearings, there are, I saw a quick release for a bike tire, pieces of chain.
Even like with things that you think can't be used or like are old, you can actually make something new out of it and make people and help other people see that it doesn't always have to end up in the garbage or stuff like that.
My name's Karen Overton. I'm with City Parks Foundation, the Partnerships for Parks Catalyst program. And I coordinated this field trip for the Green Girls. Recycle a Bicycle actually receives 2,000 bikes a year donated. Probably more than half get recycled. But they also save some parts for the jewelry making project.
I'm making a necklace out of bike parts.
I have earrings made out of headset ball bearings. The headset is the part, the front end of your bike, and the ball bearings allow your steering wheel to turn, your handlebars to turn. Then I take the ball bearings out and replace them with beads to make it a little more colorful, and they're perfect dangling hoops. My necklace is made out of chain links. They are lined with turquoise wire connecting to glass turquoise beads.
When I first heard about it, I thought it was going to be like old stuff that was like not really like cool or cute or anything, but when I got here and saw it and started, I actually realized how cool and actually really pretty the stuff is that we're making. I got it.
People should contact director at recycleabicycle.org to request a class for their group. I don't believe there's individuals can show up and do jewelry making, but groups can schedule a class.
I think it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Now that I realize that you can have a lot of fun making jewelry out of bike parts, especially if you're going on a bike ride after this.
And that's it for this week, Cityscape. Remember, if you miss an edition of Cityscape, you can podcast the show. Learn how at WFUV.org. I'm George Bodarkey. My thanks to senior producer Skylar Srivastava and producer Maureen Chin. Have a great weekend.